Support comes from the Norton Simon Museum. Celebrate the opening of I Saw It, Francisco de Goya Printmaker, with an evening of live music, art making, live model drawing, tours, and more. Saturday, April 20th from 4 to 6:30 p.m. Info at nortonsimon.org.
What happened the night Chicano student activist Oscar Gomez died?
There needs to be some rest. There needs to be some closure.
We follow the leads on Imperfect Paradise, The Forgotten Revolutionary, wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Film Week on KPCC. I'm Larry Mantle, joined this week by critics Christy Lemire of RogerEbert.com and the co-host of the Breakfast All Day YouTube and podcast series. Andy Klein joins us, and Charles Solomon of Animation Scoop and Animation Magazine. Up first is Baz Luhrmann's take on Elvis, starring Austin Butler. Christy.
A wildly over-the-top and extremely entertaining biopic about Elvis from Baz Luhrmann, which is exactly what you want when Baz Luhrmann makes a movie about Elvis. You don't want him to go under the top. Over, way over is what you want. It's what the subject calls for. I wouldn't say I learned a whole lot about Elvis from this, but Austin Butler in the starring role is just phenomenally charismatic. This is a star-making performance for this young actor. He looks so much like him, and he's just got that like raw charisma. And, you know, it's all the razzle-dazzle that you want, all the crazy swooping camera angles and the split screens and the different kinds of film stock and pieces of anachronistic music to show Elvis's influence over the years. But at its core, at its structure, it's a rather traditional music biopic. It takes him from his youth in Tupelo, first hearing R&B music and how influential that was on him, and then his rise to superstardom, and all the way through his marriage to Priscilla and his residency in Vegas and those sad final years with, you know, too many drugs. And we didn't get enough fat Elvis for my personal liking, but he is there toward the end. But the interesting prism through which we see this career is from Tom Hanks as Colonel Tom Parker. And he's also super over the top and like the prosthetics, and he's doing this bizarre accent. But it's all of a piece. It's all 2 hours and 39 minutes of just excess. And it's not going to be for everybody. I had a really, really good time. If you don't like Baz Luhrmann's style, you're not going to be down for it. But I had a good time.
We're talking about Elvis, starring Orange County's own Austin Butler, who was prior to this, most recently in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. He played Tex Watson in that film. Andy, what did you think of Elvis?
I'm slightly less enthusiastic than Christy. I thought Austin Butler was spectacular and even a little spooky at times. He really did seem, there were moments where I thought, wait a minute, have we gone to real footage of Elvis? Except Butler's has a little more feminine to him than I ever perceived in Elvis. But other than that, he is spooky good. Tom Hanks is over the top, but I kind of feel like that's the style of the film. And Colonel Tom Parker was over the top. Why apparently nobody ever noticed that he claimed to be from West Virginia and had this European accent is utterly beyond me. And I say this as here's a critic reveal. I was a music critic before I was a film critic, okay? I was a pop music critic. And I'm just old enough to remember when Heartbreak Hotel came out. A lot of the music, sometimes these songs, I'm going to do the factual check, which may be pointless because, like Moulin Rouge, this is Baz Luhrmann doing a phantasmagoria approach or a fantasia or fantasia, like they used to say. It's just riffing a lot. It has many, many of the facts. Lots of the facts are there. And a lot of the sense of the time is there because, again, I remember all these things. But Some of the musical arrangements are anachronistic, like they goosed them up when he's playing in 1956, and they didn't need to do that. Other times the songs are not chronologically suited where we are in the time scheme of the film. But it is absurdly entertaining. It embodies everything I like and dislike about Baz Luhrmann. I mean, I think he can be over-the-top ridiculous, and I think he can be over-the-top riveting. And this has both of those things in it. And I will also question why they hired a skinny guy to play Fats Domino. That one was always fat. I saw him around the period that... I mean, I saw him live around the period that he's supposed to be appearing here. He was fat.
All right. We're talking about Elvis, starring Austin Butler with Tom Hanks as Colonel Tom Parker, Baz Luhrmann, the director and co-screenwriter, with Sam Brummel, Jeremy Donner, and Craig Pierce. It's rated PG-13, and it's in wide release. The horror film The Black Phone stars Mason Thames and Madeline McGraw. Scott Derrickson is the director and co-screenwriter. Andy, what'd you think of The Black Phone?
I sort of thought this was more the same old, same old. It's a story about a kid whose neighborhood, it appears to be taking place in the 70s based on cultural references, which means no one has cell phones. You had to do that or the whole plot goes down the tubes. A kid who is one of the victims of an insane man who goes around snatching kids and dragging them into his van and locking them in his basement, played by Ethan Hawke, whose face you barely ever see. The lunatic is played. I felt like I'd seen this a million times before, quite frankly, and it was sort of suspenseful, but I kept, you keep thinking, the kid makes a weapon. And the entire time while he's, making a weapon towards the end, never occurs to him to take the top off the toilet, the big porcelain thing, and whack the guy with that. I mean, it seemed to me that they really finessed over what would have been, I'm expecting somebody in this kind of horror film to act rationally. I'm sorry. Give it to Christy.
All right. What did you think, Christy, of The Black Phone?
Oh, I loved it. I'm totally down for this. This is a movie that is set in 1978 that feels like it was made in 1978 in all the best possible ways. It is deeply steeped in this middle-class Denver neighborhood. And yes, they have no phones, of course, and that's very, very helpful. But it feels like as if the Bad News Bears were a horror movie, in that you have this really raw and realistic depiction of the way that tweens and teenagers talk to each other and interact with each other. And you have portraits of parental abuse and neglect and alcoholism like you would see in films that were made in the 70s. There's like a raw realism to it within a supernatural horror setting that I found really involving. It's so tense. The storytelling here is really efficient in that you learn things about this young man, played by Mason Thames, who is so good. You learn things about him early on that are seemingly mundane, but end up being crucial. And the way those qualities about this kid play out and become his weapons are fascinating. Like, he's a baseball pitcher. The film opens with him pitching against another kid, and he's got a great arm, and that's going to be useful. The fact that he likes to build rockets, that's going to be useful. And so these little breadcrumbs along the way are so smart and so clever. I love Ethan Hawke as a villain. It's so rare for him to play a figure like this. He's played very conflicted, complicated roles, but nothing like this. And just the sense of place is really rich. Madeline McGraw as the abducted kid's sister is very, very good. In again, like, she gets to be totally potty mouth in a way that as the mom of a 12-year-old boy, I know that kids actually do talk to each other this way because they're trying to assert themselves and trying to be more grown up than they actually are. Maybe this also hit me more because I've got a kid about this age. Maybe that was part of it too. But I was so into it. This is really, really well made. Scott Derrickson, who directed it, did the first Doctor Strange movie. But before that, he had a horror background with films like The Exorcism of Emily Rose and The Sinister. So this is him returning to his horror roots in a very muscular and satisfying way.
We're talking about the horror film The Black Phone, directed by Scott Derrickson, who co-wrote the screenplay with C. Robert Cargill. It's based on a short story, The Black Phone, by Joe Hill. It's rated R and in wide release. Coming up, Andy Klein will tell us about the action comedy The Man from Toronto. It's on Netflix and stars Kevin Hart and Woody Harrelson. And we'll also hear about the comedy Marcel the Shell with Shoes on. Funny name. It's all coming up on Film Week right here on 89.3 KPCC. Remember, you can hear all of Film Week on your time schedule by downloading it wherever you get your podcasts or at kpcc.org. Be right back.
Support for LAist comes from the Norton Simon Museum, presenting an evening in focus, Goya. The museum's galleries come to life at this interactive event, celebrating the opening of the exhibition, I Saw It, Francisco de Goya, Printmaker. Enjoy live music, art-making activities for all ages, live model drawing, tours, and more. Free with museum admission. Saturday, April 20th from 4 to 6:30 p.m. More information at nortonsimon.org.
Imagine if you could charge your electric vehicle at the places you already love to eat, shop, and play. Whether you're at the movies, on your weekly grocery trip, or running errands at your local mall, Volta EV charging stations are built around your day-to-day and located in your community and nationwide. All you have to do is check in, plug in, and go about your day. It's EV charging made convenient. Download the Volta app to find your new favorite place to charge.
It's Film Week on KPCC. I'm Larry Mantle with critics Charles Solomon, Andy Klein, and Christy Lemire. Next up, the action comedy streaming on Netflix, The Man from Toronto, starring Kevin Hart and Woody Harrelson, Patrick Hughes, the director. Andy.
This is a Netflix production. It's a classic farce plot that has been done similarly and much, much better a number of times. Kevin Hart is a total loser. He can't do anything right. His name has become, among his friends, a pseudonym for screwing things up. They say to people, oh, you teddied it. You pulled a Teddy, because Teddy is such a mess. He also screws up going to the wrong address on his big holiday, anniversary holiday or birthday holiday with his wife, and ends up going to a house where a hitman or a hitman slash brutal torturer played by Woody Harrelson is supposed to come get some information. And because the dopes who greet him don't realize that he's not this guy, he has to take on that role. And then Harrelson has to keep him in that role while actually doing the dirty work, but needing to use Teddy. And so farce complications ensue. Unfortunately, they're not very funny. I've seen, you know, this kind of identity screw up thing a million times. And this just didn't have any real juice to it. The development of what turns out to be bonding between Woody Harrelson and Kevin Hart is the only thing that kind of works in the film. But it's just there's not much there.
The Man from Toronto, Kevin Hart, Woody Harrelson, streaming on Netflix, rated PG-13. Marcel, the Shell with Shoes On, is directed by Dean Fleischer-Campney, who also co-wrote it with Jenny Slate and Nick Paley. Christy, what did you think of Marcel, the Shell with Shoes On?
I love this movie so much, and it is just so sweet and so gentle and so wise, and it is just pure joy, and it will put a giant smile on your face. the whole entire way through. This is the feature film version of a series of YouTube shorts that Dean Fleischer Kamp did with Jenny Slate like a decade ago when they were still married together. They are no longer, but he directed them. She does the voice. It's like this little tiny voice. I'm not even doing it right, but it's this sweet little tiny voice of this little bitty shell named Marcel with like one googly eye and he has shoes on. And it's Jenny Slate just saying all these sweet and bizarre and funny non sequiturs from the perspective of this tiny little shell. So they've taken that idea and several of the lines from those shorts, which have like tens of millions of views combined, by the way. There's like three of them and they're all on Dean Fleischer Kamp's YouTube if you want to go back and check those out. And they've built it out. They've created a through line. There's an actual story here. Marcel lives in this Airbnb with his grandma, Nana Connie, voiced by Isabella Rossellini. And Dean Fleischer Kamp is the guy who is staying at this house, which is an Airbnb, and he is making a documentary about Marcel. And it's how Marcel sees the world. It's a talking shell. But it's so clever over and over again in the tiny details and the ways that Marcel navigates life as a tiny shell in this house in Los Angeles, and the way he's like sort of made pulley systems and like devised all these little machines to just survive and do basic stuff. And it's really charming and really sweet and kind of just soothing. And it sounds, it might sound cheesy, it might sound twee, but it is so clever. And I laughed the whole way through. And Isabella Rossellini is just charming and warm. And she has that fantastic voice. And those two voices together have a nice contrast. So I dug it. It is very much worth checking out. It's stop motion animation and just lovely.
Marcel, the shell with shoes on, is in wide release, rated PG. The Japanese animated romance Fruits Basket Prelude is directed by Yoshiki Ibata. Charles, what did you think of it?
Fruits Basket has been around since about 2000. It's what we call a shoujo series. It's very much by and for girls. And the original was kind of a comic romance where this homeless girl got taken up by this prominent weird family that had a curse where they turned into the animals of the Chinese zodiac when they were embraced. And then it was reanimated a few years ago and somewhat differently. And this film is some sequences from that second version with some new footage and then sort of a prequel story involving the young woman's parents. And it's all pitched at this kind of, remember as a sophomore in high school, Larry, that the time when A was sobbing in the girls' bathroom because B had asked C to the dance and had been accepted. It's all that kind of overwrought. There are declarations of love and confessions of things that have gone wrong and no, I can't accept your love and oh, I'm a terrible person. There are enough tears flowing to refill the Great Salt Lake. And, you know, again, there are definite fans of this whole kind of genre of anime. And if you're one of them, it's like, you know, in the olden days, going to a three hanky weeper of a movie. No laughs in it, unlike the earlier series, but plenty of heartrending confessions and so forth, if that's what keeps you going.
The animated film is Fruits Basket Prelude, directed by Yoshiki Ibata, and it's in wide release, but just for 3 days, Saturday, and then next Tuesday and Wednesday, the film is unrated. The action comedy Green Ghost and the Masters of the Stone stars Charlie Clark, Sophia Pernas, and Kuno Becker. Michael D. Olmos is the director and co-screenwriter. Andy.
I'm going to break some rules on talking about this film. A, I generally hate vanity projects, which this is. And B, I don't think the backstory should affect your appreciation of the film, but frankly, when I got to the backstory during the closing credits, I was incredibly touched. It starts out as a Raiders of the Lost Ark knockoff. or a Stargate knockoff, and all this supernatural stuff and people sucking people's life force out of them in some ancient, you know, Aztec pyramid that's actually from another planet. And then quickly switches to the story of Charlie Clark, who is the real-life guy who stars in the film and co-wrote it. It was directed by Edward James Olmos's son. And it turns into the story of this loser. He has a Nissan dealership that's failing, and he also moonlights as sort of a manager for his adoptive brother, who does mixed martial arts stuff in illegal underground fights. And in that role, he is the Green Ghost, and he has a ridiculous wrestling-type costume, and also Green Ghost becomes synonymous with gringo. I mean, that was the original pun behind, in real life, him doing this title. And it turns out he has to, you know, grow, and he gets enlisted in helping fighting these evil forces that are trying to take over the universe with some, you know, all-powerful gem like we've seen in a million Marvel films. You know, it's got a lot of martial arts in it that are well choreographed in the sort of the Matrix style with slow-mo inserts. But you see a lot of very good wire work fighting in here. The backstory for me that you only find out during the film's all of an hour and 20 minutes, and you find out during the closing credits that he is basically making an homage to the family that took him in as a little boy from a broken home and raised him. And like the closing credits are filled with shots of him with the real mama who raised him, the Spanish Mexican-American woman who raised him. And you realize that what he has done is taken his love for his family and transformed it into this superhero film. And I found that it really deepened the film for me. I thought it was very likable. He's not much of an actor. And the film could have used a lot more humor. It has Danny Trejo, always a welcome presence, pretty much carries the weight of the humor here as somebody who, as the mother says, studied drunken boxing and really sort of forgot the boxing.
All right. Green Ghost and the Masters of the Stone, an action comedy. It's rated PG-13, starring Charlie Clark, directed by Michael D. Olmos, who co-wrote it with Clark and two other writers. And it's available on demand starting Tuesday of next week, rated PG-13. Coming up, we'll hear what our critics have to say about the Greek comedic drama Apples, also the sci-fi thriller Cryo, and the 4K restoration of David Lynch's Lost Highway, which is getting a theatrical look once again on the big screen. That's all coming up on Film Week on KPCC. And a reminder, if you missed any of our critics' reviews, including the new Baz Luhrmann film Elvis, you can get it by downloading Film Week wherever you get your podcasts or at kpcc.org.
Support for LAist comes from the Norton Simon Museum, presenting an evening in focus, Goya. The museum's galleries come to life at this interactive event, celebrating the opening of the exhibition, I Saw It, Francisco de Goya, Printmaker. Enjoy live music, art-making activities for all ages, live model drawing, tours, and more. Free with museum admission. Saturday, April 20th from 4 to 6:30 p.m. More information at nortonsimon.org.
Support comes from Japan House LA presenting Yes, Kawaii is Art. Express yourself. Kawaii translates to cute or adorable, yet its influence extends beyond aesthetics to encompass fashion, art, technology, and even social behavior. Sebastian Masuda, the king of kawaii, brings together multiple artworks unraveling the kawaii concepts to foster a sense of joy, innocence, and community as a tool for self-expression and representation. Visitors can step into this colorful world to feel the aesthetic for themselves. May 2nd to November 3rd. No admissions fee. More at japanhousela.com.
It's Film Week on KPCC. Larry Mantle with critics Christy Lemire and Andy Klein with Charles Solomon. Next up is the Greek comedic drama Apples. Christos Nikou is the director and co-screenwriter of the film. Christy, what'd you think?
I really liked it. This takes place in a modern day Greece where there's this bizarre pandemic that is spreading that causes just immediate amnesia. It comes on with absolutely no warning. You're driving your car, all of a sudden you pull over, you have no idea who you are or where you're going. And there's a structure in place to help people, like a rehab almost, to help people regain their memory and refine their place in society once again. So that is where the star of this film, Aris Servetelis, finds himself. He's placed into this rehab when all of a sudden he just has no idea what his name is or who he is. And the structure of it is a series of assignments that forces him to emerge and re-engage with the world. And they're incredibly arbitrary, these things he has to do, and they're increasingly bizarre, but it's meant to like trigger something in him and give him purpose. And he meets a young woman in there who is going through the same motions as well. It's very restrained in the way that like Yorgos Lanthimos films are. This is the feature debut from Christos Nikou, who's the director and co-writer. And there's a similar kind of like melancholy restraint to it, as well as like a surrealism that is so bizarre that you cannot help but laugh. And also the desire to connect, like that there's a longing to it. And the fact that we've all gone through, you know, a pandemic that forces us to rethink our lives and reprioritize gives it an added resonance. I really liked it.
Apples, the movie, Andy.
I would say to say restraint like Yorgos Lanthimos is crazy, because Yorgos Lanthimos is the least restrained director this side of Baz Luhrmann. But I thought this was interesting. It deals with interesting stuff. It is very, very low key. Not exactly a crowd pleaser, but it keeps its length down relatively so. And
that's damning with faint praise. It's not too long.
Yeah. It brings up some issues, and I think that there's plot elements that either Christy is stepping around very carefully or that she interpreted the ending of the film very differently than I did. But
well, now you've left me really intrigued.
Okay.
Christy, is there anything to say about that without revealing the ending?
No, I'm not giving away the ending.
All right, okay. No, I don't want you to.
But also, I mean, when I say restrained, I mean there was like a chilliness to the tone of Yorgos Lanthimos movies that like serves as a contrast for the extreme acts his characters frequently make. And that's what I mean by restrained, yeah, in that right. It's low key.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to call you crazy.
Never. Apples is the film. It's unrated in Greek with English subtitles. And the film is in select Lemley theaters, opening now and then some more added on July 1st. Cryo, a sci-fi thriller that's directed by Barrett Bergen, who wrote it with Mason D. Davis. The film stars Gillian Petrie, Emily Marie Palmer, and Mason D. Davis, who's the co-writer. Andy, what'd you think of Cryo?
I thought it was not great. Five people wake up from cryo sleep in some facility that's supposed to be a test facility, and they have no memory of who they are. So this is amnesia film number two. And there are all sorts of you know, plot switches. And in fact, there's too many plot switches, and the film circles back on itself too much, and it needed to be a half hour shorter. It could have been a good Twilight Zone episode, and it could have maybe sustained an hour and 20 minutes, but it's almost 2 hours, and a half hour of that is just feels repetitive and it doesn't deliver anything.
Cryo is unrated. It's at Lemley's Glendale Theater. Lost Highway, David Lynch's film, is being re-released at the New Art Theater in West L.A. It's a 4K restoration. Andy?
I love this film. After Mulholland Drive and Blue Velvet, it's probably my favorite David Lynch film. Once again, we have something akin to amnesia, though in a very strange sense. Jazz musician does or does not murder his wife, and he's arrested and he's in jail, and one day the jailers come and there's a teenager there in his place, and nobody knows how he got there. It's like he has turned into this other person. It has an incredibly spooky performance by Robert Blake. And given that this has to do with murdering your wife, it's kind of even spookier in retrospect. It's got all of Lynch's style in it, beautifully made. I could talk about it for an hour. You're not going to let me. But I will say, I figured out what the title means.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. The Bill Pullman character, the jazz musician, is named Madison. His last name is Madison, and he turns into a kid named Dayton. And I went and I looked at the maps. There's no highway that goes from Madison to Dayton.
So it's lost. All right.
In that case.
All right. Lost Highway is rated R, a 1997 David Lynch film at the New Art in West L.A. The British comedy thriller Flux Gourmet is written and directed by Peter Strickland. Christy.
So incredibly strange and definitely not going to be to everybody's taste. And that is a pun that is intended. It takes place at this institute where, like, performance artists study the sound of food and just like gastroenterology. And it's like culinary performance art,
odd.
But also what the sounds of it is, like beyond what a blender sounds like, beyond what chewing sounds like what food sounds like. And it's bizarre performance art, not unlike the most recent David Cronenberg film, Crimes of the Future, where it's like surgery as art. This is like cooking and food as art, but it's meant to be so frightening and so off-putting. And the colors are lurid and the costumes are really, like, everything is really, really hyper-stylized, as you would expect from a film by Peter Strickland. Among his recent films was In Fabric, which is about the haunted dress. Remember the haunted dress, Larry?
Yes.
Same
that was
guy.
Almost as good as the demonic tire.
Right, rubber. This
yes,
is the
rubber,
dress.
Yeah.
But this is about this place where people are trying to establish their artistic stamp on the world. And Gwendolyn Christie runs the place. And the lead of this most recent group who is studying there is Fatma Mohammed. And she's just got this incredible, like a Disney princess villain almost. Like, she's beautiful, but these cheekbones, and she's horrifying. And it's really, really extreme where it goes, and it's really specific and singular and weird, and not everyone's going to dig it. I was kind of like, okay, what is the point of this? Is it weird for weird's sake? It's also kind of a commentary on the art and the way in which we place importance on art that is incredibly self-important and pretentious. Anyway, it's bizarre.
It sounds like it. Flux Gourmet is unrated. It's at Lemley's Glendale Theater. And you've got me laughing, thinking about rubber again. Homicidal tire. Press Play, musical drama, directed by Greg Bjorkman in his feature directorial debut. Christy.
Andy was just talking about Bill Pullman. This stars Lewis Pullman, who is his son and is his spitting image. He looks just like him.
Yeah.
This is a kind of romantic fantasy that takes place in Hawaii. These two attractive young people fall in love. And this is not a spoiler, but the guy, played by Lewis Pullman, dies suddenly. But they were bonded by this love of music and of mixtapes. And the young woman, played by Clara Rugard, realizes that when she re-listens to the tape they are making together, it can transport her to specific places and times in their relationship. And she keeps trying to go back and back and listen to the songs and stop him from dying each time. But each time she goes back, she changes other things. So it's a really cool idea. I wish these two were better actors, and I wish they had better chemistry, because it's a really, really neat idea, and the lighting is dreamy and romantic, and the Hawaiian sunsets are gorgeous. Like, the pieces are there.
But it doesn't potential. Come together. Press
Not
play.
Quite.
Rated PG-13 at Lemley's Monica Film Center in Santa Monica and available on demand.
Support comes from Ciclovia, catalyzing vibrant public spaces, active transportation, and good health through car-free streets. Ciclovia promotes respect and infrastructure for bike and pedestrian-friendly public spaces. Enjoy these pop-up parks for the day in your favorite people-powered way. Jogging, biking, skating, strolling, or simply spectating. Free and open to all, Ciclovia Sundays generate miles of smiles in neighborhoods all over L.A. Details at www.ciclavia.org.